There's a tangle of tribes in front of us, and some of the men have whips. They're supposed to be used on their own people, to get them into shape, to move and to dance. But there's a man clearly using his whip as a weapon here, and there's an altercation.
Get back.
A couple of men begin to throw punches, but they're pulled away from one another. It's like there's an unwritten rule that this preamble is supposed to last as long as possible. It's a weird thing to say, but I just want the all-out brawls to happen now. Pull the plaster off, let me stop imagining having my head kicked in, and just let it happen for real. The peacemakers are fighting a losing battle anyway. To our right, on another corner of the square, you can just about make out some pandemonium. Limbs are flying, and it looks like the first all-out brawl of the day. I go off and I get a closer look, but as soon as I get there, this cloud of white gas starts billowing towards me.
Tear gas is out.
You can taste the tear gas.
Oh my god,
I can actually feel it.
Oh, that is horrible.
Go. Oh.
How'd you get to me now? Jesus.
Keep on.
I've run away to a side street and then up a hill to get to the outskirts of the town. It's hard to know where everyone is, but the tear gas has split us up and we've all sort of gone in different directions across town.
You okay?
Yeah.
I get my breath back and try to walk around the town to get back to the square without walking into the tear gas again. I stumble upon two of our group, Connor and Charlie. They're having a pretty good time, actually. They're getting a dance lesson off some guy outside his house.
Come on!
I get back down to the square where it seems to be relatively safe again. And as soon as everyone rushes back into the square, random, all-out fighting begins to resume. And it's met with the exact same response.
Yes, yes, yes!
Canal again.
It's clear now that there's just no point being anywhere near the main square. Police are firing tear gas non-stop, and all of the action has now moved to these narrow side streets. I run down one of these streets and see an entire tribe run in my direction. So I pull in and wait inside a door frame and hang there until they've all gone past. I pop back out and I continue down the street. And that's when it happens. There is an old man about 10 feet away from me, and I make eye contact with him. And he runs towards me. And he throws a right hook. And I just dodge it. I turn around to face him, and he's going for it again. I jump back to evade it, and I start to run away. And he sweeps his leg to trip me. But somehow, that also misses. Some other locals have seen me and start chanting, "Gringo, gringo, gringo." But I continue to run, and I keep on running.
And I know that you're probably going to be asked, and you have been asked a lot about like parallels between performing on the pitch, performing on screen. Yeah. What about heartbreak in your industry? It doesn't seem... It seems that it's quite...
That's a great question, yeah.
It seems quite unique to sport.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
It's not the same. I don't know why that is, but I think with sport, and say you're auditioning for a role, the level of investment is totally different because you're... Investment in sports requires months and months and months of running figure eights in the winter. And when you're auditioning for a role, you're spending a lot of considered time, but it's 2-3 weeks, say, max, if you're preparing for an audition. That can be really sore to take, but another audition will come in the next week or 2 weeks, whereas the championship is building up to like 60 minutes in May, June, and you're thinking about it from November. It's sore. Yeah.
And it's minor. You don't get that season back.
You don't get that season back. And I knew kind of when I was getting into drama school that I kind of been brought into the senior panel setup, but I knew that for like the kind of pre-season of one season, and I was like, as much as I would love to give this a crack. The two worlds don't line up, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, because I think...
Done all right.
Yeah. But I would love to have, at a certain point, played senior football for my county. I got to play senior football for my club, but you've got to weigh up. They just don't line up, unfortunately.
The latter of those two things surely isn't a fanciful thing to think about at some stage. There's 40-something-year-olds playing club football.
I'm smoking too much. I'd have to get myself into good nick.
Junior B then.
Junior B, yeah. Go out and throw myself around. Yeah.
Have you felt that acute sense of heartbreak in your career yet as an actor? That you felt that day here?
No, I haven't felt that. But again, I felt definitely like I haven't got things that I've wanted. But the mental setup is just it's different.
Sure.
Yeah.
So we've got 09.
You've
got 2014.
Got 2014.
Is there anything else that comes to mind for moments that you simply had to be there?
The World Cup quarterfinal this year.
You were there in Paris?
I was there in Paris with my brother. I'm going tonight. I'm watching the play tonight. But I feel like if we lose tonight, I'll never go to an Ireland-New Zealand match again, because that'll be a bad omen. But that was truly heartbreaking.
Wasn't it?
We went to the Cartier box in Paris. So it was like a beautiful like setup and like really well looked after. But that kind of goes out the window once the match starts. And I remember saying to my brother, I was like, look, Donica, we have to be well behaved here. And then I was the person like cursing and roaring. And there was like videos taken of me at the match, like trying to be like in a work mindset, but just literally I felt like I'd been hit by a bus.
You were obviously extremely, extremely tough on yourself when you were running. I don't think that's too much of a jump to say from what you're saying. What would that internal monologue be like if you didn't win a race or you didn't perform like you expected to perform?
Yeah, look, I would be down in myself, but as I said to Eoghan, I would always know that I had given it 110%.
So there was some sort of solace there?
Yes, yeah. But still, you know, there was on a few occasions, needless to say, that, yeah, I was sad, I was disappointed that things didn't work out. A couple of times I got sick before big races and wasn't able to give in my full effort. But, you know, looking back on it, that's sport, and you're not going to be on the top of your game every time you go out, and you're going to have disappointments. And I suppose the key thing is to get back and just bounce back and get back into training again. And I would have always done that. You know, I would have, even though I would have had a bad race, I knew the next morning I was going to get up and run and run it out of my system.
Yeah. Keeping going is obviously something that you very much had in spades. Like, is it a harsh question to ask? If you weren't so hard on yourself, you wouldn't have had the level of success that you had? Was it almost a prerequisite for the incredible level of success that you did achieve?
Yeah, but there's a balance there as well. I often overcooked it.
How so?
Overtraining.
So yes. The sickness was, for example, if you were sick the week of a race, mm-hmm. would that be a consequence of the overtraining, which was a consequence of being hard on yourself?
Yeah, well, a couple of times maybe. Maybe I didn't get sick that often, but I would have had a couple of times. A couple of times I overdid it and just the body just shut down and was too tired and exhausted. And again, that was just an inner drive. I just thought by doing more, it was going to be better, and didn't get the balance right. And I suppose that's the thing that I preach to people now as well, just sometimes less is more. But there was certainly times during my career whereby I exhausted out the body.
This feels like a ridiculous question to ask one of Ireland's greatest ever sports people, but this is just in your opinion. Do you feel you got the best out of yourself?
There's a long pause there, isn't there? Certainly, if I was to do it again, I would have done things differently. Things are very different now as well, and it's way more scientific. And there's more people to talk to, you know, sports psychologists and that sort of thing. I suppose is the straight and honest answer.
Is there a regret there?
Not a regret, right. No, no.
What's your perception of how Conor McGregor is viewed in Ireland?
How he's viewed?
Yeah.
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea how he's viewed in Ireland, but I can tell you this, he's a massive superstar globally.
In terms of his reputation here, I guess it wouldn't be out of line for me to say that things were affected negatively by what happened with regards to the riots in Dublin before Christmas. And I know that some of his social media posts were investigated by Gardaí with regards to inciting riots. Is that sort of behaviour from Conor McGregor something that you care about at all? Is that something you look into?
No. Listen, these guys are all grown men and women. They have their own lives. They do their own things. I don't get involved with any of that stuff.
At any point, is there something that a fighter would do or say that would cause an alarm bell in your head to go off at all? Or is that stuff, in your view, Dana, just not relevant whatsoever to a fighter's career or to their role within the UFC?
No. When they come in here and they perform whatever they have, listen, the world is a nutty place right now. So whatever goes on in their life, whatever their views or opinions are, whoever they support or don't support, it's absolutely positively none of my business.
Even something like social media posts, which could be seen to incite riots.
Whatever they do, they're grown men and women. I don't get into all the political bullshit where you get sucked in by reporters and all this other stuff about, oh, what if this guy said this or what if this guy said that? Grow up, everybody. We're all grown men and women. They can handle their own business outside of the UFC.
And then as a grown man yourself, do you make a decision on that yourself? Or listen, Conor McGregor can do what he wants, or any fighter can do what they want, but I can make a decision on their future based on that?
Have you ever heard of Sean Strickland?
Yes.
Yeah, watch some of his videos, okay? Yeah. I don't agree with a lot of what Sean Strickland does, and I don't agree with a lot of things that he says. He's a grown man. He can say what he wants to say. And, you know, in America, we have free speech. So they can do that stuff. It gets a little tricky when you go into other countries where free speech does not exist. But yeah, I'm a free speech guy.
Is that definitely the case then? I mean, like there was a case a few years ago at this point where Ariel Helwani was temporarily barred from events involving the UFC. There was an ESPN reporter last year, Jeff Wagenheim, who was told not to write anything incendiary on social media about your own situation, Dana. It doesn't really strike me as free speech.
Nobody was told to write anything. You're talking about people that I hate. I hate most of the media.
All right, you're very welcome to Corduff. We have a brand new favourite father-son combo in Irish sport. You're going to be familiar with the father of the family here, one Roddy Collins, friend of the show. Roddy, how are you keeping?
All good.
Now, this is my first time here. Apparently, we're going through the centre, are we?
Yeah, we go through the centre up into the Mecca, the Collins Mecca of boxing.
Talk us through where we're going here now.
Well, this is Corduff Shopping Centre. It's in the Collins family the last 15 years. And used to be a snooker hall upstairs, and my brother Pascal and Stephen converted into a professional boxing gym. So yeah, this is where it all happens. He's three champions here at the minute, three Celtic champions here at the minute. So this is it. This is our private entrance.
Now, when Roddy says private entrance here, let me describe what the scene is. We've just walked through a centre. We've gone to the right when we've seen the deli counter and the coffee station. And there's basically this fire door that says no entry to the gym on a piece of paper, sellotaped to the door. But we go through anyway, and we turn around, and there's this staircase inside this concrete alley, and up we go.
This is our private entrance where we can come up, you know, when it's shut. We can use it this way. I mean, my wife comes up and does a few weights in the mornings. And yeah, it's just basically a Collins little get together.
Right, you've got a few tickets to flog around here, I suspect, with the customers.
Yeah, all the girls have all bought tickets for the Friday. You're looking forward to Friday, aren't you? Yeah, the bus is leaving at the Bell at 6 o'clock, all right, and then a party back. Everyone bought tickets here.
Right.
Half a Corduff bought tickets as well, you know, so it's a great community.
Fantastic.
We all support each other, you know, so we're all looking forward to it on Friday night.
So the young fella's just upstairs here, is he?
He's up there, prepared now. His last few days, just cutting the weight down. Him and Pascal, it's an intense time for us back in the house, you know, because, you know, it's all new. Well, it's not new to us in the sense that we had it with Stephen and Pascal as a professional, but when it's under your own roof and it's your own son, you're a little bit, you know, very nervous. Let's be honest. I'm not going to hide the fact. Very, very nervous I am.
Well, here we are. Welcome to Mecca, as you say. Go on ahead there.
Mecca here is the Celtic Warrior gym. This is Pascal Collins' gym. He is, of course, Roddy's brother. He's Steve Collins' brother. And he is, this week, Podge's coach. He's been getting him in shape for the last few months. And when I walk in, he's working with him in one of the two boxing rings that I have set up in the gym.
That's it. This is where it all happens. Last few days preparing. All the months in the last couple of years of hard work, it's all coming to a head the next few days, you know. So, it's just
brilliant.
It's indescribable. I honestly can't describe it. It's just unbelievable.
Brilliant.
This stage of my life, never thought it could reach the excitement and the anticipation levels and get that buzz and nerves back in your stomach again. It's just brilliant.
How are you feeling?
Come on, how's it here?
I'm just clarifying that you thought he was very impressive on Friday night.
I thought for what he did, it was extremely impressive. The movement, particularly in the first few rounds, his peekaboo style at that age to continue to be able to be elusive was very impressive. Absolutely.
But he only threw 97 punches.
Correct. 2-minute rounds.
So that's above or around what you thought he would throw? Because I think a lot of people actually were quite surprised by how ineffective he was, and even there was a sense of Jake Paul even being a little bit guilty about, you know, not wanting to knock him out or to not finish the job against him, which doesn't really speak volumes of a great sporting contest.
I think it speaks volumes to a great sportsman that he lost that killer instinct when he saw Mike starting to slow down. And Jake Paul has done more for the sport of boxing 4 years in than any 4-year in professional boxer or MMA athlete that you can mention. He's given back more to this sport across many different facets than any MMA fighter or boxer that you can mention. So I think Jake Paul did tremendously well. And I absolutely think Mike Tyson did tremendously well. More in the world watched boxing on that night. And if you combine the last 5 years of viewership in boxing in total, boxing was a massive winner.
It feels that the card was certainly really good for boxing entertainment and for the figures going to record-breaking levels. And no doubt that Taylor Serrano had a part to play in that. But do you not think that Tyson Paul just wasn't very good for the sport of boxing, the sport only? Forget the entertainment and the business side of things for a moment. Do you not think it damages the sport a little bit?
How?
He's nearly 60.
How did it damage the sport?
Because you have this guy who is, as I say, nearly 60, who is entering into a ring where the whole objective is to get your head pucked off you, to knock the guy out. And at the end of the day, the very objective of the sport was shelved because Jake Paul felt a little bit guilty about going up against a guy who was
pretty
free.
Just tell me how it was. How did it take away from the sport? How did it reduce interest in the sport? How did it take away from getting young people interested in becoming boxers? When I walked into my son's school today, almost every single kid had watched the event. How is that bad for the sport, Owen?
Wait, are you saying that those kids are more interested in lacing up a pair of gloves because they watched Paul versus Tyson?
Absolutely, they're all more interested in boxing. They watched the entire.
More interested in lacing up a pair of gloves and participating in the sport after watching that.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely. What do you think they're going to be more interested in? A highly technical bout between two individuals they've never heard of that don't bring any passion and excitement to it? I mean, I don't know what frame you're looking at it from, but it was a tremendous night for the sport of boxing.
I'm looking at it through the frame. No one can deny that.
If you're looking at it from a purist perspective of that wasn't exactly what I wanted to be from a boxing perspective of two great athletes. That's you're thinking about it the wrong way. Boxing has become a smaller and smaller sport.
I don't disagree with that last point, but I'm looking at this through the frame that you presented. Is this fight going to inspire the next generation to box?
Absolutely, it is.
Right.
As Jake has said, some kid and many kids watched it. The stat to tell you the stat: 56% of homes in the U.S. that night during the Paul Tyson fight were watching Paul Tyson.
Yeah.
So out of every two homes in the U.S., one of them was watching this event. And there's a lot of kids who watched the event and learned about boxing for the first time. And that's powerful.
And it got booed in the arena.
No, it got booed at some point. Yes, one round. Very common in boxing.